A galaxy of candles burned in the middle of the floor. In the corroded mirrors around the room, they looked like the lights of a shoal of deep-sea fishes. William walked past overturned chairs. There was one upright, though, behind the candles. He stopped. "Ah, William," said the chair. Then Lord de Worde slowly unfolded his lanky form from the embracing leather and stood up in the light. "Father," said William, "I thought you'd come here. Your mother always liked the place, too. Of course, it was different in those days." William said nothing. It had been. "I think this nonsense has got to stop now, don't you?" said Lord de Worde.
"I think it is stopping, father."
"But I don't think you mean what I mean," said Lord de Worde.
"I don't know what you think you mean," said William. "I just want to hear the truth from you."
Lord de Worde sighed.
"The truth? I had the best interests of the city at heart, you know. You'll understand one day. Vetinari is ruining the place."
"Yes, well, that's where it all becomes difficult, doesn't it?" said William, amazed that his voice hadn't even begun to shake yet. "I mean, everyone says that sort of thing, don't they? I did it for the best. The end justifies the means. The same words every time."
"Don't you agree, then, that it's time for a ruler who listens to the people?"
"Maybe. Which people did you have in mind?"
Lord de Worde's mild expression changed. William was surprised it had survived this long.
"You are going to put this in your rag of a newspaper, aren't you?"
William said nothing.
"You can't prove anything, you know that."
William stepped into the light, and Lord de Worde saw the notebook.
"I can prove enough. That's all that matters, really. The rest will become a matter of inquiry. Do you know they call Vimes Vetinari's terrier? Terriers dig and dig and don't let go."
Lord de Worde put his hand on the hilt of his sword, and William heard himself think, "Thank you. Thank you. Up until now I couldn't believe it."
"You have no honour, do you?"
said his father, still in the voice of infuriating calm.
"Well, publish and be damned to you, and to the watch. We gave no order to—"
"I expect you didn't," said William. "I expect you said, 'Make it so,' and left the details to people like Pin and Tulip. Bloody hands at arm's length."
"As your father, I order you to cease this—"
"You used to order me to tell the truth," said William.
Lord de Worde drew himself up.
"Oh, William, William, don't be so naive."
William shut his notebook. The words came easier now. He'd leapt from the building and found that he could fly.
"And which one is this?" he said. "The truth that is so precious it must be surrounded by a bodyguard of lies? The truth that is stranger than fiction? Or the truth that is still putting on its boots when a lie is running round the world?"
He stepped forward.
"That's your little phrase, isn't it? It doesn't matter any more. I think Mr. Pin was going to try blackmail, and, you know, so am I, naive as I am. You're going to leave the city right now. That shouldn't be too hard for you. And you had better hope that nothing happens to me, or anyone I work with, or anyone I know."
"Really? Right now?"
screamed William, so loud that Lord de Worde rocked backwards. "Have you gone deaf as well as insane? Right now, and don't come back, because if you do, I'll publish every damned word you've just said."
William pulled the disorganiser out of his pocket.
"Every damn word, do you hear me? And not even Mr. Slant will be able to grease your way out of that. You even had the arrogance, the stupid arrogance, to use our house. How dare you? Get out of the city, and either draw that sword or take your hand off it." He stopped, red-faced and panting. "The truth has got its boots on," he said. "It's going to start kicking." His eyes narrowed. "I told you to take your hand off that sword."
"So silly, so silly. And I believed you were my son."
"Ah, yes, I nearly forgot that," said William, now rocketing on rage. "You know one of the customs of the dwarfs?" "No, of course you don't, because they're not really people, are they? But I know one or two of them, you see, and so—"
He pulled a velvet bag out of his pocket and threw it down in front of his father.
"And this is—"
said Lord de Worde.
"There's more than $20,000 in there, as close as a couple of experts could estimate," said William. "I didn't have a lot of time to work it out, and I didn't want you to think I was being unfair, so I've erred on the generous side. That must cover everything I've cost you over the years. School fees, clothes, everything. I have to confess you didn't make such a good job of it, given that I'm the end result. I'm buying myself off you, you see?"
"Oh, I see. The dramatic gesture. Do you really think that family is a matter of money?" said Lord de Worde.
"Well, yes, according to history. Money, land, and titles," said William. "It's amazing how often we failed to marry anyone who didn't have at least 2 out of 3.
"Cheap jibe. You know what I mean."
"I don't know if I do," said William. "But I do know I got that money a few hours ago of a man who tried to kill me."
"Tried to kill you?"
For the first time, there was a note of uncertainty.
"Why, yes. You're surprised," said William.
"If you throw something into the air, don't you have to worry about where it bounces?"
"Indeed you do," said Lord de Worde.
He sighed, made a little hand signal, and William saw shadows detach themselves from deeper shadows. And he remembered that you couldn't run the de Worde estates without a lot of hired help in every department of life, hard men in little round hats who knew how to evict and distrain and set man-traps.
"You have been overdoing it, I can see," said his father as they advanced. "I think you need, yes, a long sea voyage. The Isles of Fog, perhaps. Or possibly Forex. Or Bang Bang Duck. There's fortunes to be made there, I understand, by young men prepared to get their hands dirty. Certainly there's nothing for you here. Nothing good."
William made out 4 figures now. He'd seen them around on the estates. They tended to have one-word names like Jenks or Clamper, and no visible pasts at all. One of them said,
"Now, if you'll just see a bit of sense, Mr. William, we can all do this nice and quiet."
"Small sums of money will be sent to you periodically," said Lord de Worde. "You will be able to live in a style which..."
A few wisps of dust spiralled down from the shadowy ceiling, twirling like sycamore leaves. They landed next to the velvet bag. Overhead, a shrouded chandelier jingled gently. William looked up.
"Oh, no," he said. "Please don't kill anyone."
"What?"
said Lord de Worde. Otto Shriek dropped to the floor, hands raised like talons.
"Good evening,"
he said to a shocked bailiff. He looked at his hands.
"Oh, what am I thinking of?"
He bunched his fists and danced from foot to foot.
"Put them up in the traditional Ankh-Morpork pugilism."
"Put them up," said the man, raising a cudgel. "Blow that."
A jab from Otto lifted him off his feet. He landed on his back, spinning, and slid away across the polished floor. Otto spun round so fast that he blurred, and there was a smack as another man went down.
"What's this? What's this? I'm using your civilized fisticuffs, and you don't want to fight?"
he said, springing back and forth like an amateur boxer.
"Ah, you, sir, you shall fight."
The fists blurred into invisibility and pummeled a man like a punch bag. Otto straightened up as the man fell and absent-mindedly punched sideways to catch the charging fourth man on the chin. The man actually spun in the air. This happened in a few seconds, and then William got enough of a grip to shout a warning. He was too late. Otto looked down at the length of sword blade sticking too far into his chest.
"Oh, will you look at this," he said. "You know, in this job I just cannot make a shirt last 2 days.
He turned to Lord de Worde, who was backing away, and cracked his knuckles.
"Keep it away from me," shouted his lordship.
William shook his head.
"Oh, yes," said Otto, still advancing. "You think I am an it? Well, let me act like an it."
He grabbed Lord de Worde's jacket and held him up in the air with one hand at arm's length.
"We have people like you back home," he said. "They are the ones that tell the mob what to do. I come here to Ankh-Morpork. They tell me things are different, but really it is always the same. Always there are damn people like you. And now what shall I do with you?"
He wrenched at his own jacket and tossed the black ribbon aside.
"'I never liked the damn Coco anyway,' he said.
"'Otto!' The vampire turned.
"'Yes, William, what is it you wish?'
"'That's going too far.' Lord de Word had gone pale. William had never seen him so obviously frightened before.
"'Oh, you say? You think I bite him? Shall I bite you, Mr. Lordship?'
"'Well, maybe not, because William here thinks I am a good person.'
He pulled Lord de Word close, so their faces were a few inches apart.
"'Now maybe I have to ask myself, how good am I? Or maybe I just have to ask myself, am I better than you?'
He hesitated for a second or two, and then, in a sudden movement, jerked the man towards him. With great delicacy, he planted a kiss on Lord de Word's forehead. Then he put the trembling man back down on the floor and patted him on the head.
"'Actually, maybe the cocoa is not too bad, and the young lady who plays the harmonium, sometimes she winks at me,' he said, stepping aside.
Lord de Word opened his eyes and looked at William.
"'How dare you!'
"'Shut up,' said William.
"'Now I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. I'm not going to name names. That's my decision. I don't want my mother to have been married to a traitor, you see?
Then there's Rupert, and my sisters, and me too. I'm protecting the name. That's probably very wrong of me, and I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to disobey you one more time, in fact. I won't tell the truth, not the whole truth. Besides, I'm sure that those who want to know these things will find out soon enough, and I dare say they'll sort it out quietly, you know, just like you do.
"'Traitor!' whispered Lord de Word.
"'That is what people would say.' Lord de Word nodded, like a man caught in an unpleasant dream.
"'I could not possibly take the money,' he said. "'I wish you joy of it, my son, because you are most certainly a de Word. Good day to you.'
He turned and walked away. After a few seconds, the distant door creaked open and shut quietly. William staggered to a pillar. He was shaking. He replayed the meeting in his head. His brain hadn't touched the ground the whole time.
"'Are you okay, William?' said Otto. "'I feel sick, but, yeah, I'm all right. Of all the bone-headed, stubborn, self-centred arrogant! But you make up for it in other ways,' said Otto. "'I meant my father!'
"'Oh.
He's just so certain he's in the right all the time. Sorry, this is still your father we're talking about? Are you saying I'm like him?
Oh, no.
Quite different. Absolutely quite different. No similarities whatsoever.
You didn't need to go that far,' he stopped.
"'Did I say thank you?'
"'No, you did not.
Oh, dear. No, you noticed that you didn't, so that is okay,' said Otto. "'Every day, in every way, we get better and better. By the way, would you mind pulling this sword out of me? What kind of idiot just sticks it in a vampire? All it does is mess up the linen.'
"'Let me help.' William gingerly withdrew the blade.
"'Can I put this shirt on my expenses?'
"'Yes, I think so.'
"'Good. And now it is all over, and time for rewards and medals.'
said the vampire cheerfully, adjusting his jacket.
"'So where are your troubles now?'
"'Just starting,' said William. "'I think I'm going to be seeing the inside of the watch-house in less than an hour.'
In fact, it was 43 minutes later that William de Word was helping the watch, as they say, with their inquiries. On the other side of the table, Commander Vimes was carefully re-reading the Times. He was, William knew, taking longer than necessary in order to make him nervous.'
"'I can help you with any long words you don't recognise,' he volunteered. "'It's very good,' said Vimes, ignoring this. "'But I need to know more. I need to know the names. I think you know the names. Where did they meet? Things like that. I need to know them.'
"'Some things are a mystery to me,' said William. "'You've got more than enough evidence to release Lord Vetinari.
I want to know more.'
"'Not from me.'
"'Come on, Mr. de Word, we're on the same side here.'
"'No, we're just on two different sides that happen to be side by side.
"'Mr. de Word, earlier today you assaulted one of my officers. "'Do you know how much trouble you are in already?'
"'I expected better of you than that, Mr. Vimes,' said William. "'Are you saying I assaulted an officer in uniform, "'an officer who identified themselves to me?'
"'Be careful, Mr. DeWord.
"'I was being followed by a werewolf, Commander. "'I took steps to inconvenience it so that I could get away. "'Would you like to debate this publicly?'
"'I'm being an arrogant, lying, supercilious bastard,' thought William, "'and I'm good at it.'
"'Then you give me no choice but to arrest you for concealing—'
"'I demand a lawyer,' said William.
"'Really? And who did you have in mind at this time of night?'
"'Mr. Slant.'
"'Slant? You think he'll come out for you?'
"'No, I know he'll come out, believe me.'
"'Oh, he will he?
Trust me.'
"'Come now,' said Vimes, smiling. "'Do we need this? It's the duty of every citizen to help the Watch, isn't it?'
"'I don't know. I know the Watch think it is.' "'I've never seen it written down,' said William. "'There again, I never knew it was the right of the Watch "'to spy on innocent people.' "'He saw the smile freeze.
"'It was for your own good,' Vimes growled.
"'I didn't know it was your job to decide what was good for me.'
"'This time Vimes won a small prize.
"'I'm not going to be led either,' he said. "'But I have reason to believe that you are withholding information "'about a major crime, and that is an offence.' That's against the law.
Mr. Slant will come up with something.
There's some precedent, I'll bet. He'll go back hundreds of years. The patricians have always set great store by precedent. Mr. Slant will dig and dig, for years if necessary. That's how he got where he is today, by digging.
Vimes leaned forward.
Between you and me and without your notebook, he muttered. "'Mr. Slant is a devious dead bastard "'who can bend such law as we have into a puzzle ring.'
"'Yep,' said William. "'And he's my lawyer. I guarantee it.'
"'Why would Mr. Slant speak up on your behalf?' said Vimes, staring at William.
William matched him eyeball for eyeball. "'It's true,' he thought. "'I'm my father's son. All I have to do is use it.'
"'Because he's a very fair man,' he said. "'Now, are you going to send a runner to fetch him? "'Because if you're not, you've got to let me go.'
"'Without taking his gaze off William, "'Vimes reached down and unhooked the speaking tube "'from the side of his desk. "'He whistled into it and then put it to his ear. "'There was a sound like a mouse pleading for mercy "'at the other end of a drainpipe. "'Vimes put the tube to his mouth.
"'Sergeant, send someone up to take Mr. DeWord down to the cells, will you?'
Vimes sighed and replaced the pipe. He got up and opened the door.
"'Fred! Send someone to take Mr. DeWord down to the cells, will you?' he yelled. "'I'm calling it protective custody for now,' he added, turning to William.
"'Protecting me from whom?'
"'Well, I personally have an overwhelming urge to give you a ding alongside the ear,' said Vimes, "'and I suspect there are others out there without my self-control.'
It was, in fact, quite peaceful in the cells. The bunk was comfortable— The walls were covered with graffiti, and William passed the time correcting the spelling. The door was unlocked again. A stony-faced constable escorted William back up to Vimes's office. Mr. Slant was there. He gave William an impassive nod. Commander Vimes was sitting in front of a small yet significant pile of paper and had the look of a beaten man.
"'I believe Mr. DeWord can go away,'
said Mr. Slant. Vimes shrugged.
"'I'm only amazed you aren't asking me to give him a gold medal "'and an illuminated scroll of thanks. "'But I'm setting bail at 1,000—'
"'Ah!'
said Mr. Slant, raising a grey finger. Vimes glowered. Vimes grunted and reached into his pocket. He tossed William a dollar.
"'Here,'
he said, with extensive sarcasm.
"'And if you aren't in front of the patrician at 10 o'clock tomorrow, "'you've got to give it back.'
"'Satisfied?' he said to Slant.
"'Which patrician?' said William. "'Thank you for that smart answer,' said Vimes. "'Just you be there.'
Mr. Slant was silent as he walked out into the night air with his new client, but after a while he said,
"'I have presented a writ of exeo carco cum nihil preti on the basis of olfacere violarum and sine plenis piscis. "'Tomorrow I shall move that you are ab harmo, "'and in the event of this not working, I—'
"'Smelling of violets,' said William, "'who had been translating in his head, "'and pockets full of fish.
Based on a case some 600 years ago, when the defendant successfully pleaded that although he had indeed pushed the victim into a lake, the man came out with his pockets full of fish to his net benefit, said Mr. Slant crisply. In any case, I shall argue that if withholding information from the watch is a crime, every person in the city is guilty.
Mr. Slant, I do not wish to have to say how and where I got my information, said William. If I have to, I shall have to reveal all of it. The light from the distance lamp over the watch-house door, behind its blue glass, illuminated the lawyer's face. He looked ill.
You really believe these two men had accomplices?
He said. I'm sure of it, said William. I'd say it's a matter of record. At that point, he almost felt sorry for the lawyer, but only almost.
That might not be in the public interest, said Mr. Slant slowly. This ought to be a time for reconciliation.
Absolutely. So I'm sure you will see to it that I don't have to pour all those words into Commander Vimes's ear.
Strangely enough, there was a precedent in 1497 when a cat successfully...
Good. And you will have one of your special quiet words with the Engravers Guild? You are good at quiet words.
Well, of course I will do my best. The bill, however...
Won't exist, said William. Only then did Mr. Slant's parchment features really crease up in pain.
Pro bono publico,
he croaked. Oh, yes. You will certainly be working for the public good, said William. And what is good for the public, of course, is good for you. Isn't that nice?
On the other hand, said Mr. Slant, perhaps it would be in the interests of everyone to put this sorry affair behind us, and I will be, happy to donate my services.
Thank you. Mr. Scrope is now the patrician?
Yes.
By the vote of the guilds?
Yes, of course.
The unanimous vote?
I don't have to tell...
William raised a finger. Ah, he said. Mr. Slant squirmed.
The beggars and the seamstresses voted to adjourn, he said. So did the launderers and the Guild of Exotic Dancers.
So, that would be Queen Molly, Mrs. Palm, Mrs. Manger, and Miss Dixie Voom, said William. What an interesting life Lord Vetinari must have led.
No comment.
And would you say Mr. Scrope is looking forward to getting to grips with the manifold problems of running the city? Mr. Slant considered this one.
I think that may be the case, he conceded.
Not least of which is the fact that Lord Vetinari is in fact completely innocent, and that therefore there is a very large question mark over the appointment. Would you advise that he takes up his duties with several spare pairs of underpants? You don't have to answer that last one.
It is not my job to instruct the Assembly of Guilds to reverse a legitimate decision, even if it turns out to have been based on erroneous information, nor is it my responsibility to advise Mr. Scrope on his choice of undergarments.
See you tomorrow, Mr. Slant, said William. William barely had time to undress and lie down before it was time to get up again. He washed as best he could, changed his shirt, and went cautiously down to breakfast. He was, in fact, the first at the table. There was the usual stolid silence as the other guests gathered. Most of Mrs. Arcanum's boarders didn't bother to talk unless they had something to say. But when Mr. McElduff sat down, he pulled out a copy of the Times from his pocket.
"Couldn't get the paper," said Mr. McElduff, shaking it open, "so I got the other one."
William coughed. "Anything much in it?" he said. He could see his headline from where he sat, in huge, bold caps. "Dog Bites Man." He'd made it news.
"Oh, Lord Vetinari got away with it,"
said Mr. MacLeod.
"Well, of course he would," said Mr. Prone. "Very clever man, whatever they say."
"And his dog's all right," said Mr. MacLeod. William wanted to shake the man for reading so slowly.
"That's nice," said Mrs. Arcanum, pouring out the tea. "Is that it?" said William.
"Oh, there's a lot of political stuff," said Mr. MacLeod. "It's all a bit far-fetched." "Any good vegetables today?" said Mr. Cartwright. Mr. MacLeod carefully inspected the other pages. "No," he said.
"My firm are thinking of approaching that man to see if he'd let us sell his seeds for him," Mr. Cartwright went on. "It's just the sort of thing people like." He caught Mrs. Arcanum's eye. "Only those vegetables suitable for a family environment, of course," he added quickly.
"Aye, it does you good to laugh," said Mr. MacLeod solemnly.
It crossed William's mind to wonder if Mr. Wintler could grow an obscene pea. But of course he could.
"I would have thought it's quite important," he said, "if Lord Vetinari isn't guilty."
"Oh, yes, I dare say, to them as has to deal with these things," said Mr. MacLeod. "I don't quite see where we come into it, though."
"But surely," William began.
Mrs. Arcanum patted her hair.
"I've always thought Lord Vetinari was a most handsome man," she said,
and then looked flustered when they all stared at her.
I mean, I'm just a little surprised there isn't a Lady Vetinari, as it were. Ahem.
Well, you know what they say," said Mr. Windling.
A pair of arms shot out across the table, grabbed the surprised man by the lapels, and pulled him up so that his face was a few inches from William's.
"I don't know what they say, Mr. Windling," he shouted. "But you know what they say, Mr. Windling. Why don't you tell us what they say, Mr. Windling? Why don't you tell us who told you, Mr. Windling?"
"Mr. De Word, really?"
said Mrs. Arcanum. Mr. Prone pulled the toast out of the way.
"I'm very sorry about this, Mrs. Arcanum," said William, still holding the struggling man. "But I want to know what everyone knows, and I want to know how they know it. Mr. Windling?"
"They say he's got some sort of lady friend who's very important in Uberwald," said Mr. Windling. And I'll thank you to let go of me."
"And that's it? What's so sinister about that? It's a friendly country."
Yes, but they say..."
William let go. Windling rocked back into his chair, but William stayed standing, breathing heavily.
"Well, I wrote the article in the Times," he snapped. "And what's in there is what I say, me, because I found things out and checked things, and people who say ing a lot tried to kill me. I'm not the man that's the brother of some man you met in the pub. I'm not some stupid rumour put about to make trouble, so just remember that before you try any of that everyone knows stuff. And in an hour or so, I've got to go up to the palace and see Commander Vimes and whoever is the patrician and a lot of other people to get the whole thing sorted out. And it's not going to be very nice, but I'm going to have to do it because I wanted you to know things that are important. Sorry about the teapot, Mrs. Arcanum. I'm sure it can be mended."
In the ensuing silence, Mr. Prone picked up the paper and said,
"You write this?"
"Yes."
I thought they had special people."
All heads turned back to William.
"There isn't a they. There's just me and a young lady. We write it all." "But who tells you what to put in?"
The heads turned back to William.
"We just decide." Is it true about the big silver discs kidnapping people?"
"No." To William's surprise, Mr. Cartwright actually raised his hand.
"Yes, Mr. Cartwright?"
"I've got quite an important question, Mr. De Word, what with you knowing all this stuff."
"Yes?"
"Have you got the address of this funny vegetable man?"